subsequent times that he was asked by different Jewish bodies to look into the bombing of Auschwitz, he repeated his pro forma answer that this could not be done.
I always hoped if I get killed by a bomb here, it'll be a blessing to me. It'll end the misery. But never such a thing happened. And the bombing that was done was nothing, really. I didn't see any buildings coming down. I didn't see any railways being bombed. So I can't see what bombing was done, no. But there was no damage done like bombing in Rotterdam or the bombing in London. So that was very little, and it was a disappointment to me.
There was one occasion. I think that was one of the most painful moments for me, when we were allowed in one of the camps in Silesia called Liberosa to send postcards. It was Sunday afternoon. Everybody was given a postcard and access to a pencil, which was very rare. And you could write anywhere in the world. And at first I was really, you know, terrific. I'll write to somebody. And then I realized there was no one I could write to.
As the Russians got closer and closer, the Nazis tried frantically to conceal the evidence of mass murder. The gas chambers and crematoria of Auschwitz were blown up, and thousands died on forced marches as the remaining slave laborers were sent away from the east, back into the heart of Germany.
And we marched out. We walked from Auschwitz to Gleiwitz. A lot of incidents happened then. If you couldn't march along anymore, you were shot. I saw them run away from the march. I saw the SS kneel down, his gun on the shoulder, and there was another one dead.
By late 1944, the remnants of Auschwitz arrived at other camps, dumping grounds for thousands of prisoners. Leon Greenman went to Buchenwald.
Everybody felt that the Americans were near. Liberation was near. And I see still the SS shooting their revolvers through the windows into the barracks, and the people rushing out of the wooden staircases at the sides of the wooden barracks in Buchenwald. And the first five or six, they fell, and hundreds trampled on them. And when they all walked away, they were laying bodies. They were dead.
In December 1944, Anita Lasker was sent by train from Auschwitz, hundreds of miles to Belsen.
We had no idea really where we were going, but we were told there were rumors that we were going to Belsen, and it's a very nice place. It's a place where people recuperate. Couldn't quite believe it, however, and we were also told that if we work hard and build the camp up, all will be very well. However, we got there. We were vintage prisoners, you know. We could smell, we could see how things are going.
The influx into these camps was now so enormous that at the end, conditions were worse than ever. Then came liberation.
2 days later, about a dozen American soldiers came in. Must have been doctors and photographers and picture people. And they came into my barrack, and my capo said to me, the German capo, he said, you speak English, you talk to the people. So I talked to them. I introduced myself and I said, hello, glad to see you. And it smelled to death and it smelled to dirt in the camps. And for an outsider, it was, of course, was something not nice. So he said, well, we've seen it all. I said, you've seen nothing. I said, please come along with me. And I took them from bed to bed, pulled the blankets away, and I said, look, skeletons, bones and skins. That's what they've done to us. And big, strong soldiers, they turned away. They were disgusted with it.
When these camps were liberated, the world was shocked by the sight of these people. But they had survived. They were still living. They could be filmed. Their families couldn't.
I think to me, probably the most painful thing is the one thing that I didn't actually see, but I know happened. For instance, what happened to my parents. They were taken away one fine day. And the next thing I knew was a postcard from my father from a place called Ispica that nobody's even ever heard about, where he just wrote the beginning of a psalm. I lift up my eyes to the hills, from whence comest my help. I found out that these particular people dug their own graves and were shot into them. So in a way, to me, although I didn't see it happen, is the most painful thing that you live with.
The first newsreels of concentration camps caused considerable impact. In occupied Germany, civilians were forced to watch them, as were German prisoners of war in Britain. At the end of April 1945, Churchill's Minister of Information, Brendan Bracken, referred to Sidney Bernstein's documentary in the House of Commons.
The material is being used by the Ministry of Information for making a film to be shown in Germany, and a version of this will be available for showing to audiences in this country.
Conceived in wartime, the documentary was aimed at the German people, and its message was summed up in the final sequence.
It remains for us to care for these, the living. It remains for us to hope that Germans may help to mend what they have broken and cleanse what they have befouled. This was the end of the journey they had so confidently begun in 1933. 12 years? No. In terms of barbarity and brutality, they had traveled backwards for 12,000 years.
The film neared completion. But for the government, peace was to bring new problems. On August the 4th, 1945, Sidney Bernstein received a memo from the Foreign Office.
My personal opinion is that we need a first-class documentary record of these atrocities and that we cannot be content with the rather crude and unthought-out newsreel so far shown. On the other hand, policy at the moment in Germany is entirely in the direction of encouraging, stimulating, and interesting the Germans out of their apathy. And there are people around the CNC who will say, no atrocity film.
What do you think lay behind this note?
Nothing behind it, in the sense of some deep, mysterious thing or somebody sabotaging the national effort. But it was that they had got the responsibility of getting that country on its feet again. Because once you've demolished it, that's not the end of war, that's only the beginning of the battle for peace, which means you rebuild it. And they had to have people to do that, and the only people they had to do it were Germans.
Germany was now in a critical condition. Buildings were in ruins. People were starving. 20 million were homeless. 10 million refugees were on the move. In August 1945, 4,000 Berliners were dying each day. The British military government was much more concerned with these crises than with showing an atrocity film. Lord Annan, then Lieutenant Colonel Noel Annan, was a member of the British Control Commission stationed in Berlin.
I mean, there's a great deal of competition between military government officers about clearing up the wreckage, getting the sewage working, getting the refugees into camps, or getting them marching one way, and usually, if you can, out of your own Christ and into somebody else's. There was all that. The general desire for efficient and just government. Now, that was one thing. The second thing I think that the colonial mentality showed itself in the British was, well, if we got to get these people working and working with us, the sooner then that we, as it were, can get them on our side and make them realize that we are really going to be their leaders, the better. And therefore, don't let's have too much trouble. The British military government, of course, was concerned with getting the place going, whereas I, in the political division, was concerned with denazification and going round to military government officers and saying, I'm sorry, your mayor has got to go. He was a Nazi in 1933, but this man's the best chap I've got in the place. I can't do without him, came back the reply, and I said, I'm sorry, the directives say he's got to go, and he's out. I wasn't absolutely the most popular man in the British zone for going around and saying that.
The first Nazi war crimes trial opened in the British sector in September 1945. Belsen Commandant Joseph Kramer and Dr. Fritz Klein were among 11 sentenced to death. But although individual Nazis were put on trial, the British government's main concern was not with retribution, but with the effect of a severe winter on the German people. This had been predicted in the Foreign Office memo to Sidney Bernstein in August.
I would say that the atrocity film, if really good and well documented, would be shown willingly and successfully in 9 months' time, when the difficulties of the winter have been tackled. There may, therefore, be no hurry for it.
That winter proved a long one. Germany eventually emerged from this sort of chaos, but it was divided between the West and Russia, and soon there were other reasons why the film would not be shown in the Western part.
It became a nation with whom we were in the end going to have relations with. And so therefore that's what happens. The whole idea that the collective guilt of the whole German people should be brought home to them by 48-49 was of course out of the question in the terms that had been thought of in April 45.
Do you think it should have been shown at the time?
At the time, two Germans.
So you disagreed with the memo they sent you?
I didn't take kindly to it.
Some people are still saying that these concentration camps never happened. Do you believe that this film will prove that it did?
I do, but if it doesn't, it's failed miserably. Very sad. But if you could get all the people who say these things in one room and show it to them, it might be effective.
This is a terrible thing. That's why it is so important to show it again and again. I mean, one doesn't have to keep rubbing it in, but from time to time, I think a reminder has to be made that it has happened. And I mean, you know, there are enough people alive still who've actually seen it.